Anchored is a production of the Classic Learning Test. Based in Annapolis, Maryland, reconnecting knowledge and virtue through meaningful assessments. Visit us at cltexam.com/get-started.
Welcome back to the Anchored Podcast. We are here at ISI headquarters with ISI's second youngest president here, Johnny Burtka, and his new book, Statesmanship, right here. Also here with my daughter, Grace Tate, who's a high school senior heading to James Madison University next year. Thank you, Johnny, for hosting us at ISI today and the great work that you're doing.
Absolutely. We're big fans here of the Classical Learning Test and all the work that you're both up to. So very good to be talking with you.
Well, thank you. And President Burtka is a member of our Board of Academic Advisors at CLT. So we're grateful for your support over the years as well. I'm excited to dig into statesmanship, but I want to talk first just a bit about your own background. You went to Hillsdale College. You graduated in 2012. You knew many of our dear friends, Zach Miller, who's now the Director of Admissions at Hillsdale. But you didn't have the typical journey into Hillsdale. A lot of Hillsdale students are coming from great homeschools or great classical K-12s. You came from the public school system. So what led you to Hillsdale and what was your experience like there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up going to the local public school, Hanover Horton High School. I actually grew up in Hillsdale County, so I was a townie at the time. And, I was raised in a very conservative and Christian home, but we weren't connected to the classical education movement in any way. But I certainly had a hunger for learning. Mm-hmm. I always loved to study. And my heart was set on going to the University of Michigan, which I was a diehard Michigan football fan.
Okay.
Used to go.
I saw you were at the game recently. So
I was
congrats,
at, yeah, I went
congrats.
To a game this
You did
year.
Lose your coach, though.
That's right. It's sad. Oh, it's a sad week for me. So anyways, I grew up going to Michigan football games every Saturday. We had season tickets. I got into U of M and sort of, you know, that was where I was set. And then we had a family friend who's an admissions counselor who said, hey, you really should come down. There's a lecture on Lincoln with one of the notable Hillsdale professors at the time. And so I went down to hear this lecture and I was absolutely blown away. I had not encountered anything like that in my high school experience. So I said, oh, okay, there must be something here that's different than these other schools like Michigan that I had been visiting. And one thing led to another. They kept slowly pulling me back to campus, having me sit in on different classes. And I specifically remember one conversation with Dr. Westblade, who would eventually marry me and my wife. He was also a pastor. He taught religion classes at Hillsdale, and my dad and I sat in on one of his classes. And at the end of the class, you know, my dad is an engineer by background, and he worked in the auto industry for a long time. Asked him, you know, what on earth is my son going to do with a liberal arts education when he graduates? And my professor, or Dr. Westblade, said, you know, why don't John, which is my dad's name as well, go home, pull up the website for your company and look at the C-suite of the company and see what their undergraduate educations were. And so we did that. And it just so happens to be, and I don't know if this is still the case today with many, you know, Fortune 500 companies, that almost all of them had liberal arts backgrounds.
Totally.
And so that sort of helped to persuade us. And then thankfully, I stumbled through my admissions interview at Hillsdale. They asked me the question, you know, what great books were formative to you? And besides Romeo and Juliet and the Bible, I didn't really have anything because those were all that I studied at my public school. But they were willing to take a chance on me. And then that changed the trajectory of my whole life.
Wow. Okay. And then from Hillsdale to the American Conservative, is that right?
Well, so I went to grad school after. So I went to a seminary, a reformed seminary in Aix-en-Provence, France. So I did an MDiv equivalent there. Then I came back and I did a year with the Trinity Forum. They used to have a year-long fellowship program out on the Eastern Shore of Maryland where they brought, you know, professors like Josh Mitchell, probably many others who are, you know, familiar with CLT. Joseph Prudhomme would come out on a weekly basis. Michael Cromarty, journalist and mentor us. And so I did that for a year. Then I came to ISI the first time. So in 2014, I worked here for 2 years in development. And then I left to go to the American Conservative, where I became the executive director and the acting editor. And then for the past 3.5 years, I've been back at ISI.
Love it.
Yeah. So I'm a rising college freshman, and I'm sure many other rising college freshmen are with me and wanting to get involved in ISI, what would you say are like the best first steps for students that, even if they aren't a freshman, maybe further down in college, just any student that's looking to be involved in ISI, what would you say the best first steps are for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. At the heart of ISI's programs is really friendship and mentorship. So it's an opportunity to connect with like-minded students that share your religious and political and intellectual interests, but also to be connected with great professors who can help shape your education and help you navigate the curriculum and the classes at your university. So in terms of first steps, ISI has campus societies at 140 campuses around the country, and we have student newspapers that we help to fund and train the journalists at over 85 college campuses. So hopefully there's a local group on your campus that you can get connected with. If not, we have a national network of programs officers who visit college campuses, and they can help get you connected to ISI seminars, conferences that are year-round throughout the country. And all of those are 100% free. So if you want to hop on a plane and fly and meet other great conservative leaders and spend an enjoyable weekend somewhere studying, you know, great books and great ideas, ISI is the place to go.
That's great. You know, when I visit these K-12 classical schools, they typically, you walk into the building and they have where the current seniors are heading or where they've been accepted at least. And, you know, a lot of them are heading to Hillsdale or Grove City or some of these schools that we love at CLT, but a lot of them are heading to places like James Madison and UVA as well. And so I think especially check out ISI if you're listening to this as a great network of folks to get plugged into. So I am holding this beautiful, fresh off the press printer copy of Statesmanship. This is incredible. I mean, you've got a foreword by none other than the one and only Larry Arnn, president of Hillsdale. On the back here, we've got endorsements from Victor Davis Hanson at the Hoover Institute, Patrick Deneen, Harvey Mansfield. This is incredible. Tell us a little bit about kind of the idea behind Statesmanship. How was this idea born?
Absolutely. So most people are familiar with business books, right? Self-help books like Good to Great by Jim Collins,
yes,
or Peter Thiel's Zero to One.
That's right.
And in America, there's nothing that we love more than a good self-help business book. You know, they're at the top of the New York Times charts. Many business schools teach these books. There's an entire industry around really offering conduct advice, lifestyle advice for aspiring entrepreneurs. But nothing comparable exists for statesmen or aspiring statesmen. And so the premise of this book is really that situation where we don't have any advice manuals for political leaders is a historic anomaly. So nearly every civilization in history, going all the way back to antiquity, the Greeks, the Romans, the Jews, all the way through, you know, the Muslims, ancient India, ancient China, they all had their texts, and they all thought very deeply about the qualities that they wanted to instill in their political leaders, and they created the educational institutions necessary to pass on that knowledge. And so this tradition that I'm describing is called the Mirrors for Princes tradition. Okay. Basically, these are short books offering, you know, leadership advice, and they're connecting first principles with just practical tips for how to be a good leader. And so this collection is essentially compiling the greatest hits of all time. I think of it as the political wisdom of mankind, all assembled in one place for leaders, you know, people who want to engage in politics, but also, you know, if you're the captain of your cross-country team, or if you're, you know, in a leadership position at your school or your church or in your home, this is practical advice to make you a better person and to help you, you know, glean wisdom from ancient sources.
Now, what were some of the kind of the guiding principles for you as you were thinking about what to include and what to leave out here?
Yeah, it's a good question, because there's a lot of text that could be included. I think the first test is, did the text stand the test of time? And with some of these, I mean, they were, you know, not only the most popular books around for hundreds of years, but for thousands of years, right? So you have Xenophon's The Education of Cyrus, which is telling the story of this leader, Cyrus the Great, a Persian ruler. You know, this is something that Julius Caesar said he never left for a battle without scrolls of Xenophon's The Education of Cyrus. And then you fast forward, 1800 years or more, and you have Thomas Jefferson reading this in his library at Monticello. You have Cicero's On Duties, and this book shaped, you know, the early church fathers. it shaped a lot of, you know, Renaissance political thinkers, you know, all the way to Thomas More never leaving the house without a copy of it in his breast pocket. So there's this kind of enduring, timeless quality. And so, you know, I wanted to include those books that people might have some familiarity with. And then there were other books. I really wanted to highlight that each particular civilization and religious tradition has their own take on this genre. And so I included a Chinese text, an Indian text, a Muslim text, a Byzantine text to really show, you know, especially as we think about political leadership today on the world stage, I think many of our foreign policy professionals are largely ignorant, you know, first and foremost of the religious context of many of the different nations and leaders that they interact with, but also the just general political and historical traditions that they might be drawing from. So this kind of gives you, it's not exhaustive, it doesn't say everything about those cultures or traditions, but it gives a window into their thought.
Sure, sure. And I'm thinking about one of your first, and it may have been the first, Conservative Conversations podcast that you did, and you were talking about the education of America's founders and how indebted, you know, Washington was to Cincinnatus and others. When I think about, you know, the current Congress, I get the sense on both sides of the aisle, they're probably not as indebted to those leaders. What is the risk of that? If there's this disconnect, if the education that our leaders are receiving right now is completely different than that of our founders, is there a risk in that? If so,
what? Yeah, there's a massive risk, which is that the regime that the founders, you know, built and designed, the whole constitutional order, won't work anymore if people are not receiving a foundational education in the Judeo-Christian, Greco-Roman tradition, because these are the ideas, and you see this in Russell Kirk's great book, The Roots of American Order, that really are underpinning our understanding of liberty in America today. And so without the foundation, most leaders are going to be motivated, certainly by self-interest, which, you know, everyone has self-interest, so it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's a bad thing if it's contrary to the good of the community, or more vague notions of humanitarian, you know, I could do good, make a difference in the world, but it's largely unmoored from, you know, the classical kind of, you know, an understanding of moral philosophy, theology.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was really one thing that I've been, you know, note for this book is that the progressive era, beginning of the progressive era in the early 20th century, really did a lot of damage to this tradition and to classical learning as a whole. And part of that, at least with politics, is that there was a shift away from statesmanship, you know, classically understood wise leaders who have their hand on the rudder of the ship of state, and they're using the classical virtues to navigate through rough waters. And there's a shift towards management, towards expertise, towards bureaucracy, towards, you know, quote unquote, scientific analysis of politics. Because I think people felt that it was safer and, you know, you could, I don't know, it was a safer approach. And then also I think the higher education system is guilty of what, you know, C.S. Lewis described as presentism. You know, if it wasn't written in the last 10 minutes, they're either ignorant of it or they're suspicious of it.
Fantastic. I'm wondering, you know, when I think about the history of ISI and William Buckley and his legacy and Russell Kirk, all of this predates, you know, the current K-12 classical renewal movement. And now you've got this movement that has really kind of hit a tipping point, is pretty explosive. It seems like anyone you talk to now has some reference point for, you know, what is this classical education movement? How has that impacted ISI? Has that been, when you look at your chapters at these 140 colleges around the country, are you having more and more students in those that received a classical education K-12?
Yeah, so in some sense, it creates an interesting dynamic for ISI, because the students that come in with the classical background, you know, in terms of their intellectual formation, their moral formation, they're, you know, light years ahead of students who don't have that. I think of my own time at Hillsdale, sitting in Paul Ray's, you know, Intro to Western Civ class. This is my first experience really studying the classics, and literally having, you know, all the other students who were classically educated were name dropping. You know, this is the 10th time they've read Plato or Aristotle or whatever. And I was totally clueless. I had none of the dots. I couldn't connect any of them. I was like trying to have to do it on the fly. And it took me, you know, a good year before I really felt like confident and comfortable, you know, in that setting. So I think the classical education gives a lot of ISI students a leg up because they already have the foundation before they're going to college. But that's not all the ISI students. You know, there might be another half of them who are who actually have almost no knowledge of this Great Books tradition, even especially at elite schools, they're just not studying them in their core curriculum anymore, if they even have a core curriculum. And so that means that that ISI is doing much more foundational work of introducing them to these texts for the first time.
Okay. Well, let's talk about books and let's dig in here. I mean, we're talking about statesmanship again. I'm grateful now to have my own copy to take home. I'm wondering, we were talking about this a bit during lunch. Grace was planning on reading The Conservative Mind this summer, and you recommended maybe actually Russell Kirk's American Order. Is that right? Instead, when you think about the books that have influenced you and your vision for ISI over the next, 3, 5, 10 years, what are some of those books that have been most influential?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I certainly, first and foremost, I go to Russell Kirk's Roots of American Order. This is something that I made, coming on to ISI, really the centerpiece of our flagship undergraduate honors conference, because I think it does two things particularly well. One, I think it answers arguments that are being posed both by sort of the left, but also by some people on the right. So on the left, basically the argument that, America really, it began with slavery, right? That was sort of the inception of America. There's not much more to it. Sure. This is a way to offer students a look at the full breadth of Western history and show how our American regime really does have roots that go all the way back to Jerusalem, Athens, Rome, London, and Philadelphia. And then it also offers a corrective to some of the post-liberal analysis that says America was only an Enlightenment project. So he's really tracing, I think, in making a conservative case for the conservative tradition throughout American history. And when I say conservative, I mean a tradition that's rooted more deeply in this kind of Greco-Roman, Judeo-Christian past. And he's essentially mounting a defense of America as a regime itself. So I like to say, that's probably one of the most influential books for me. A lot of the books that are actually the texts that are included in Gateway to Statesmanship have been quite formative. One in particular, Thomas More's Utopia is included in there. And the thing that I like about Thomas More, as you think about realism and approaching the political moment that we're facing, people often jump to Machiavelli for, first thinking of kind of realist thought. But I like to see Thomas More, perhaps provocatively, as almost a Catholic Machiavelli. And what I mean by that is he was a man who was engaged in the political battles at the time, but only up until a point, and when his conscience was violated, he essentially gave his life for his faith. And in that text, Utopia, he describes a conversation between a fictional character named Thomas More and a traveling intellectual named Raphael. And Raphael was described as a philosopher, and he would hop from city to city and have conversations and do salons. And Thomas More says, you have so much experience and wisdom, you should get involved in politics and offer your services to a king. And Raphael says, oh no, I would never get my hands dirty in politics. It's not nuanced enough. I'd offer, pearls of wisdom and kings would trample them underfoot. Like, I just don't have time for this. And Thomas More rebukes him and says, basically, the reason that our country is in such a poor state is because philosophers won't condescend to offer their counsel to princes. Wow. And he says, you can't abandon the commonwealth. You can't jump ship just because you can't control the winds. Life is sort of like a play, and each of us are pulled onto the stage. And if Hamlet's playing, we don't get to change it to King Lear. You have to take each situation, make it the best that you possibly can, and hopefully you can also bring some good about it. So I think Thomas More has been instructive to me, just as I think about positioning ISI to address the various cultural challenges that we face in America today.
Before lunch, we had a chance to tour the beautiful new conference facility you have here. You had a big 70th anniversary gala where you had Tucker Carlson giving the keynote address there. There's a level of urgency in the speech that he gave that night with what we're facing in this current moment. When you think about the influence and the reach of ISI, what is it going to look like in 5 or 10 years? Are you hoping to double the number of campuses you're at? What does success look like to you as you think about the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, so I, first and foremost, look for quality over quantity. So really what we're doing at ISI is we're not only are we providing students the education that they're often not getting in the classroom, but we're also building a countercultural leadership network. So, you know, I can honestly say that ISI has identified the smartest conservative leaders and the most ambitious and talented conservative leaders at the top schools in the country. And when I say top schools, I mean both sort of classically understood, the Hillsdales, the Grove Cities, the Thomas Aquinas's, but also, you know, conventionally the Ivy League schools, the top state schools. And so our hope is really that we can bring these leaders together, that through friendship, through mentorship, not only can we make, you know, great souled men and women, but these are people who will go on and I think change America, both in the local, their local communities, but at the national level for the better. And that includes politics. That includes getting married to each other in some cases and starting families. It's founding companies. I mean, there literally have been ISI students who entirely through their ISI connections have founded tech companies and got funding from, you know, conservative venture capitalists. You know, others have gone on to the Supreme Court, or they've started newspapers, or they've worked in presidential administrations. So our hope is really with sort of the resurgence of populism in America. I think some people think you can do away with elites altogether. And at the fundamental level, I don't think that's true. I think you're always going to have elites. You're always going to have people with a sense of with power, either wealth or political power, or cultural influence. And so it's really a question of, are you going to have good elites or bad elites? And so ISI is really focused on cultivating good ones.
Good. Fantastic. Great, Saint. Any other questions here for President Burka?
Yeah, I'd love to just hear more about what you'd recommend, more about any more books for freshmen in college that are some freshmen. I mean, I had a classical education growing up, but I wouldn't say that I've, you know, been the type of person that's always been sitting down with a great classical book at the beach in the summer. So what are some more classical books that you'd recommend just for freshmen that are kind of more newer to reading books like this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a great place to start is actually a series of books that ISI published a couple decades ago, and these are students' guides to the major disciplines. So there's one that's focused on liberal learning that was written by the late Father Schall. There's others that, you know, cover really every subject from philosophy to economics to theology. And so these are short. They're probably 50 to 60 pages long. They're written by, you know, pretty notable professors. I think Harvey Mansfield wrote the political philosophy one. And so this is a great way to just have a quick primer. It's sort of the introduction that you should be reading before your intro level courses in college. So I'd recommend that. You know, a personal favorite is, you know, Virgil's Aeneid. Obviously, Aristotle's Ethics was another text that was pretty formative for me. None of those are necessarily light, you know, beach reading. I think if you're looking for something that's maybe more digestible, you know, that's where I would turn to a Russell Kirk or a Robert Nisbet, The Quest for Community, or some of these other, you know, conservative classics that are probably easier reads.
I have one more question, actually. Okay. So I'm going to be a political science major at JMU, but I have a question for, what about some of my friends who feel really called to nursing? What if there's students out there who feel called to nursing or other sorts of majors that don't really overlap as much with something that ISI, but still feel really called to what ISI is doing and learning more about classical education and stuff like that? What would you recommend for those students? How can they get involved in ISI and make that a part of, you know, their path, even if they're going towards an opposite direction, such as like nursing or something in
a
different field? Yeah.
So, yeah, first I would say, I think it's great that you have friends that are interested in going to nursing, you know, for, I think, two reasons. One, it's a career where you are, you know, literally every day helping people with your hands, and you're encountering people of all income levels, from all backgrounds, and you're really making a tangible difference in, you know, by doing sort of acts of service when people are at their most difficult moments. And second, it actually comparatively, you know, pays pretty well. Like you can make a decent living with nursing, you know, especially I have friends from back home that are traveling nurses, and they're, you know, making close to six figures a year doing that. And it's a pretty, you always have a lot of job security. So I wouldn't discourage people at all from pursuing programs or degrees that actually have a very kind of practical, tangible kind of vocation that comes out of it. And then I would say, I think ISI should be of even greater interest to them, because if most of their classes are based in the sciences, or most of them are more practical and hands-on, this is a way that they can kind of keep their mind engaged with great ideas, or perhaps even, you know, learn about some great ideas or thinkers for the first time, and, you know, build friendships with people that share their values, and hopefully that'll last the course of their life. So I would love to see, you know, if we could wave a wand tomorrow and have, you know, a third of our students be either, you know, like tradesmen or, you know, nurses. Like, I would be all about that.
Love that. Again, the book is Gateway to Statesmanship. We're here with the president of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, Johnny Burtka. John, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeremy and Grace.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Anchored. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to leave a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. And remember to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.